Mandarin oranges.
Good morning. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, January 10th, 2020. My name is Colleen, and I'm glad to have you listening. We'll start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. Today's weather forecast calls for a high of 25 and a low of 4 degrees. Expect increasing clouds with a north wind of 11 to 21 miles per hour. And the headlines, Carry On Biden, former security guard arrested. Driver from police chase busted for meth and weed. Drivers walk away from semi-crash. And we'll start with Carry On Biden. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, speaking Thursday during a campaign stop in Fort Dodge on behalf of Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden, wasted little time before sharply criticizing President Donald Trump. Kerry spoke to an audience of about 60 people at Biden's campaign offices in Fort Dodge. "Once every 4 years," Kerry said, "Iowa gets to go through this caucus routine. Maybe once every 4 years, Donald Trump will tell the truth. No, not once every 4 years." Kerry was especially critical of the targeted drone attack that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani on January 3rd just outside the Baghdad airport. The Iranian government retaliated by launching missiles at two U.S. bases inside Iraq. "In 2004, when I was running," he said, "Iraq was exploding. We had a Republican president making bad decisions, and here we are in 2020, and life has not changed." His concerns about the president are ongoing as the Iranian situation continues. This morning, he was lying to the country about what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats had said about Soleimani, Kerry said, referring to the Democratic Speaker of the House, trying to pretend that they had supported him. Kerry summed up his views on the situation before moving on to other subjects. "We all understand General Soleimani was a danger and enemy to our country," he said. "But the issue was, what do you do about it? What choices do you make? And how do you go to the brink of a war, which literally depended on a nation we don't like and we don't trust responding somewhat strategically? Imagine what would have happened if they hadn't done that. Imagine where we'd be today if Americans had been killed at that base." Kerry believes Trump acted without considering other options. "You don't make these kinds of decisions with the recklessness that Donald Trump has approached this. So without consultation, impulsively, he takes the very extreme option the military gave him, not something the military thought he would do. They were shocked that he chose to do that. For years, the Republican presidents and Democrats alike have resisted making that choice because they knew what the implications were." Kerry believes Biden would have handled the situation differently. "I don't want us to have a president of the United States who's willing to put at risk the lives of young men and women in our country, tear families apart, start another war without thinking through what the downstream impacts of those choices are," Kerry said. "What Donald Trump did was not just reckless and dangerous for the world. He put every diplomat in the region at risk, put every country in the region at risk. Who knew what decisions they would have made in order to retaliate for the killing of the second most important person in their country?" Kerry went on to cite Biden's experience dealing with the economic recovery as vice president during the Obama administration. "Who did the president picked to do that. He picked Biden, Kerry said. Kerry, a longtime supporter of gun control laws, delivered his appeal to the audience. Joe Biden led the fight to do what is common sense, Kerry said. I'm a hunter. I respect the Second Amendment. I don't want the government doing things it shouldn't do under our Constitution. But I've got news for you. I've read the Constitution again and again and again. I've hunted again and again and again. There's nothing in the Constitution, there's nothing in my hunting manual that says I have to go out and shoot a deer with an assault weapon that's meant to kill people in war. So folks, we got to get smart. Joe Biden took that on and he won the assault weapon ban. Kerry said he understands the lack of faith in government. We're all worried, he said. This is a time of change. We've all seen it happening. The world we grew up in is not the world we're living in. In every respect, life has changed. Kerry said it began in earnest with economic conditions after the 2008 housing market collapse. That's what happened, he said. The crushing down of capacity to grab the brass ring and advance in life. It is government dysfunctional today. They don't do anything really. Why did it happen? Because none of the promises were fulfilled. That's what people in America are feeling today, that the promises are broken and they can't necessarily get ahead and the system is rigged against them. Donald Trump, to his credit, in a sense, politically understood this sense of alienation and anger. He tapped into it, promising to drain the swamp and be the guy who stood up for the little guy, but he didn't. He turns out to be the greatest fraud and huckster in American history. Kerry believes Biden can help create a better economy by working on climate change. Climate change is the biggest economic opportunity this country has ever had. Why? Because the solution to climate change is energy policy. It is not something we've dreamed up. We have to dream up. It's something we already have to a large measure. We, the richest country in the planet, could actually solve our problems, he said. Donald Trump thinks climate change is a Chinese hoax. He is actually doing things that are making it worse. Kerry doesn't believe the tensions with Iran will end anytime soon as the underlying differences continue to exist. It will remain very tense, he said. The issue is not resolved because the tensions of the conflict will continue to play out in the region. He also doesn't believe the increased sanctions imposed on Iran by the Trump administration will help. He's continuing to squeeze Iran, Kerry said. They're just piling on because there's no off-ramp to where you're going with diplomacy. There's no real diplomacy. All there is maximum pressure. Former security guard arrested. Jackson charged as accessory to kidnapping, pot robbery. A former security guard for Iowa Central Community College is accused of aiding four former student-athletes in a 2018 kidnapping and armed robbery, a drug deal that went wrong. Spencer Jackson, age 29, was arrested Tuesday by a Buena Vista County deputy at the Webster-Calhoun County line. He faces four accessory after-the-fact charges, aggravated misdemeanors stemming from the May 2018 incident. Criminal complaints allege that Jackson aided the four students implicated in the pot robbery by acting as a mole within Iowa Central's security team, directing the students away from campus while police investigated. The former rugby player for Iowa Central Community College was implicated through numerous conversations with him as reflected in phone records, the Buena Vista County Sheriff's Office said. Three of the defendants, John Hankerson, Jarek Crosby Fisher, and Amari Johnson, have since been convicted and were sentenced to prison terms on robbery and kidnapping charges after the Albert City robbery of 2 pounds of marijuana and $3,800 cash. Charges against the fourth defendant, Jerome Roberts, have been suspended pending a restoration to mental competency. He's scheduled for a hearing on Monday because of officials with the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale have reported he's been restored. The crime started on Fort Dodge's Iowa Central campus. There, Buena Vista County authorities said an Albert City man acting as an intermediary between the marijuana dealer and the students was forced to drive them to Albert City at gunpoint by Hankerson. At 120 Flower Street in Albert City, Hankerson pistol-whipped two Albert City residents before stealing the weed and cash. A maroon Chevrolet Impala waiting to transport Hankerson and Roberts from the scene sped out of Albert City in waning daylight. We believe they had assistance, said Buena Vista County Attorney Paul Allen in a recent interview with the Storm Lake Times. There was someone who knew what was going on, who helped coordinate their movements, someone who knew where certain people were at certain times. Jackson was employed part-time as a work-study student at Iowa Central from February to October 2018, according to the college's Human Resources Department. His employment was terminated by Iowa Central. We took the incident seriously and cooperated with the Fort Dodge Police Department and other law enforcement during the course of the investigation, college president Dan Kinney told the Times. Anybody involved in the incident is either no longer enrolled or was terminated from employment. The extent of the relationship Jackson forged with the defendants is unclear. Court documents say Jackson called all the defendants before and after the robbery, but they don't list the times or the nature of their conversations. Buena Vista County Sheriff Corey Elston declined comment on whether they received assistance from others in the Fort Dodge area. Jackson is scheduled for an initial appearance January 27th in Buena Vista County. Jail records said he posted a $2,000 bond after he was arrested. Driver from police chase busted for meth weed. Charges connected to low-speed pursuit in November. The Fort Dodge motorists who led police on a low-speed midday pursuit in November has been charged with possession of a substantial quantity of drugs recovered from the incident after a month-long investigation. Marquette Jackson, age 34, was arrested by Fort Dodge police on outstanding warrants Wednesday during a traffic stop. He's charged with possession of methamphetamine and marijuana with intent to deliver, a Class B and Class D felony, respectively. Police recovered 86 grams of meth, about 3 ounces, and 14 grams of marijuana, according to a criminal complaint. Jackson is also charged with failure to affix tax stamps, a Class D felony. Police said in the complaint that a total of $13,000 cash was found on Jackson's person, in his wallet, and in an area where he attempted to hide some while fleeing on foot during the November pursuit. Jackson allegedly fled from Fort Dodge officers during a traffic stop in the 100 block of South 12th Street, prompted by a seatbelt violation when the traffic stop started to turn into a narcotics investigation. Officers circled a 4-block area from Central Avenue to 12th Street, eventually pursuing Jackson and a passenger on foot in November. Police alleged the passenger, Johnny Jackson Jr., age 56, was in possession of the drugs. Jackson is held in Webster County Jail on a collective $35,000 bond. A preliminary hearing on the charges is scheduled for January 17th. Drivers walk away from semi crash. A semi trailer versus car crash on U.S. Highway 20 in Calhoun County left a sedan driver with a possible concussion Thursday morning. A new co-op semi turning west onto the highway from Xenia Avenue was rear-ended by a Chevrolet Impala as it gained speed around 9:45 a.m., according to Iowa State Patrol Trooper Paul Gardner. The driver of the Impala, Taylor Nelson of Otho, age 24, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center in Fort Dodge for a non-life-threatening concussion. The two occupants in the semi had no injuries. The semi was left with functional damage that required a tow. The Impala was totaled. Nelson was cited for failure to stop and assured clear distance, Gardner said. The driver of the semi, Rochelle Sierra, 51, age 51, is still under investigation for potential violations, he added. Gardner said the last similar crash he covered involved a semi-trailer and a car resulted in a fatality. On page 2, Messenger poll, what is your opinion of the federal law that raised the age to purchase tobacco products from 18 to 21? This date in history, today is Friday, January 10th, the 10th day of 2020. There are 356 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on January 10th, 1984, the United States and the Vatican established full diplomatic relations for the first time in more than a century. On this date in 1776, Thomas Paine anonymously published his influential pamphlet, Common Sense, which argued for American independence from British rule. In 1860, the Pemberton Mill in Lawrence, Massachusetts, collapsed and caught fire, killing up to 145 people, mostly female workers from Scotland and Ireland. In 1861, Florida became the third state to secede from the Union. In 1863, the London Underground had its beginnings as the Metropolitan, the world's first underground passenger railway, opened to the public with service between Paddington and Farringdon Street. In 1870, John D. Rockefeller Incorporated Standard Oil. In 1917, legendary Western frontiersman and showman William F. Buffalo Bill Cody died at his sister's home in Denver at age 70. In 1920, the League of Nations was established as the Treaty of Versailles went into effect. In 1967, President Lyndon B. Johnson, in his State of the Union address, asked Congress to impose a surcharge on both corporate and individual income taxes to help pay for his Great Society programs as well as the war in Vietnam. That same day, Massachusetts Republican Edward W. Brooke, the first black person elected to the U.S. Senate by popular vote, took his seat. In 1994, President Bill Clinton attended a NATO summit meeting in Brussels, Belgium, announced completion of an agreement to remove all long-range nuclear missiles from the former Soviet Republic of Ukraine. In 2002, Marines began flying hundreds of Al-Qaeda prisoners in Afghanistan to a U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In 2004, actor-writer Spalding Gray, age 62, vanished from his New York apartment. His body was found 2 months later in the East River. In 2016, David Bowie, the chameleon-like star who transformed the sound and the look of rock, with his audacious creativity and his sexually ambiguous makeup and costumes, died in New York. 10 years ago, data showed China edging past Germany in 2009 to become the top exporting nation. 5 years ago, hundreds of thousands of people marched in French cities from Toulouse in the south to Rennes in the west to honor the victims of recent terror attacks. 1 year ago, a 13-year-old Wisconsin girl, Jamie Kloss, who had disappeared in October after her parents were killed, was found alive in a rural town about an hour from her home, and a suspect was taken into custody. Jake Patterson pled guilty to 2 counts of intentional homicide and 1 count of kidnapping after admitting that he killed Jamie's parents and imprisoned her under a bed in his remote cabin for 88 days before she made a daring escape. He was sentenced to life in prison. Thought for today: in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. And that was from Ecclesiastes 1:18. Community calendar. Kossuth County Historical Museum is open 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kossuth County Historical Museum in Algona. Blandon Memorial Art Museum is open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 920 3rd Avenue South. Admission is free. Rockwell City Rotary Club at noon at the Community Center, 424 Main Street. A.A. Allen O. Club, noon and 8 p.m. at 12 North 7th Street. Nickel Bingo, 1 p.m., Multipurpose Senior Center in Emmitsburg. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club, 1:30 p.m., open game at Citizen Central. Narcotics Anonymous at 6 p.m. at the Allen O. Club, 12 North 7th Street. And on the editorial page, we have a messenger editorial. As Puerto Rico suffers, aid must be handled wisely. Assistance must actually help those who need it. Our fellow Americans in Puerto Rico just can't seem to catch a break. Still attempting to recover from Hurricane Maria in 2017, many of the islands have been affected by strong earthquake this week. In comparison to the hurricane, which killed nearly 3,000 people and caused nearly $100 billion in damage, this week's quake was not serious. Just 1 death has been reported by authorities. But the 6.4 magnitude quake was bad enough. By Wednesday, about 250,000 Puerto Ricans were without water. The homes of many were damaged badly or destroyed. Perhaps the worst aspect of the disaster is it sets back efforts to recover from the 2017 storm. President Donald Trump already has pledged to send aid to Puerto Rico. The quicker it can be delivered, the better. At the same time, prudence suggests a look at how well Puerto Rican officials are handling disaster relief in general. More than 2 years after Maria, the territory's power grid still has not been restored entirely. These are our neighbors. We, their fellow Americans, want to help, but we want some assurance aid we send will be used effectively. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and at 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. Now we'll take a look at today's obituaries. Harold Lewis Carlson, age 89, formerly of Fort Dodge, passed away on Tuesday, January 7th. The memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 11th, at the St. Olaf Church in Fort Dodge, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service. Harold, the son of Arthur and Mabel Carlson, was born on September 22, 1930, in Gowrie, Iowa. He graduated from Gowrie High School and served in the Korean War with an honorable discharge. On August 28, 1955, Harold was united in marriage to Violet Erickson. He farmed and was a rural mail carrier, retiring in 1995. In 2004, he moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota to be closer to family and enjoyed listening to polka music daily. Survivors include children Susan, husband John Fisher of Webster City, Diane Carlson of Plymouth, Minnesota, Kathy Carlson of Jacksonville, Florida, Marcia, husband Leon Hendrickson of Burnsville, Minnesota, 8 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, his sister Alice Koessel, K-O-E-S-S-E-L, of West Des Moines, Iowa, and many nieces and nephews and extended family. He was preceded in death by wife Violet, parents, brother Richard, sisters Mary and Wilma. Loffesweiler Seavers Funeral Home has reminders. George E. Fox, F-A-W-K-E-S, age 90, funeral Saturday at 11 a.m., First United Methodist Church, visitation 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. at the church. Reverend Gerald Milbreath, age 85, funeral Saturday, 10:30 a.m. at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, visitation today at 4 to 7 p.m. at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, prayer service at 7 p.m. at the church. Johanna Bakoven, age 72, visitation Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m., Loffesweiler Funeral Home. Funeral services, 5 p.m. Saturday at the Loffesweiler Funeral Home. Stephen Green, age 76, services are pending. Gunderson Funeral Home has a little reminder. In service to Clarence Deserly, D-E-S-E-R-L-Y. Okay, now we have the go and do. In Fort Dodge, self-defense program for women 13 years and older is 8 to 9 a.m. Saturday at Pfeifferlick Martial Arts, located at 567 South 25th Street. This program will cover the most common threats facing women. Participants will learn some simple and effective techniques, using awareness, leverage, and timing to defend yourself and escape from seemingly impossible situations. No experience is necessary. Participants should wear comfortable workout attire. Pre-registration is required by emailing justin.pfeifferlick@gmail.com. The program is free. In Fort Dodge, Soldier Creek Winery at 1584 Paragon Avenue is holding Vineyard Vibrations from 6 to 8 p.m. today. Free live music will be provided by Melanie Devaney. Food will be available for purchase. In Fort Dodge, the Fort Dodge Regional Bridal Extravaganza is noon to 4 p.m. Sunday at the Crossroads Mall. Admission is free. Blandon Memorial Art Museum is holding a life drawing class from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. today. The class is for participants 18 years and older. Class size is limited to 10. Bring your own materials and draw from the human form in any of its various shapes and postures from observation of a live model using any drawing media. Cost is $10 to $20 depending on model. In the area, Webster City, the Kendall Young Library, Webster City will present the movie Norm of the North, King Size Adventure from 10:30 a.m. to noon Saturday at the library. In Emmitsburg, the Palo Alto Arts Council presents classics at the Riviera Theater at 4:30 p.m. Sunday. Forbidden Planet will be shown. Admission is free. Lehigh. The Lehigh United Methodist Church will be holding Second Sunday Supper from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday for a free will offering. Scalloped potatoes and ham, salad, dessert, and a drink will be served. Carryouts will be available. In Clare, the Clare Public Library annual Pancake Breakfast and Bake Sale fundraiser is 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Sunday at the Clare Community Center. Pancake sausage, loaded and plain scrambled eggs, juice, and coffee will be served. Adult tickets are $6. Children's tickets are $5. Children 3 and under are free. All proceeds go to the library for much-needed shelving. Monetary donations and donations to the bake sale will be accepted. In Clarion, a community concert featuring Carter Nath and the Irish band Croda is 3 p.m. Saturday at Clarion First United Methodist Church in Clarion. Admission is by free will offering. We have some Mother Earth news, a dromedary, a desert drink. An artisan cheesemaker explains one of the world's rarest ferments, camel's milk. When I was about 15 years old, I thought owning a camel would be the coolest thing ever. Oh, the sensation we would cause riding on the local parades. I had a Jersey dairy cow at the time, but even in my wildest dreams, milking a camel didn't cross my mind. Now, decades later, after learning more about these large, odd beasts and the possibilities of their milk, I almost want to own one again. Trekking through the sands of time. Camels have served mankind for the past 4,000 years, providing meat, milk, hides, and reliable transportation. All members of the camels trace their ancestors to the North American continent. From there, they migrated to South America, where they exist today, sometimes called New World camels, as llamas, vicunas, guanacano, and alpacas. They also migrated north across the Bering Land Bridge in Asia and eventually clear to the tip of Africa. About 11,000 years ago, they became extinct in North America. In Eurasia, however, their descendants adapted, thrived, and became camels we know today. In Asia, two species emerged, the short-legged, two-humped Bactrian or Asian camel and the critically endangered wild Bactrian in northern Africa and the Arabian Peninsula, the taller, leggier, one-humped dromedary or Arabian camel evolved. Although feral populations of camels exist in some parts of the world, the only true wild camel is the Bactrian. Both the Bactrian, who favors cooler climates, and the dromedary, who thrives in desert and semi-arid conditions, are remarkably thrifty creatures. In fact, everything about their physiology is designed to optimize the consumption and conservation of water and feed. The camel is a long-haul, low-maintenance survival machine that can thrive in even the worst conditions. Camels are well equipped for these tough situations with a hump that stores high energy fat, an internal thermostat that can regulate the animal's temperature throughout the day, kidneys and colon that can modulate water loss, red blood cells that don't rupture when mass quantities of water are consumed in a short time, thick lips and gums that allow thorny, otherwise inedible plants to be consumed, and more. The camel's ability to survive in dire conditions makes it an intriguing livestock option for the parts of the world already feeling the long-term effects of climate change. Treasure from a foreign land. Precise, reliable information on the nutrient content of camel's milk is completely dependent on the camel species and even more importantly, on how the animal is cared for. In a fascinating paradox, the more feed and water a camel consumes, the less moisture its milk contains. For example, a camel with a nursing calf on a long trek across the desert will have higher water content in its milk than if it were back at the village eating and drinking regularly. It's believed, and it certainly makes sense, that this is simply to ensure the calves stay well hydrated under severe conditions. Humans trekking alongside or on top of camels on long thirsty trips have reaped the benefits of this paradox for centuries. When the water content increases in the milk, the components such as protein, fat, lactose, and minerals decrease. Thus, the camel's milk collected during these conditions has very low lactose content, about half of cow's milk, in addition to the other components. But under good feeding conditions, these components increase to normal levels are comparable to cow's milk. It's well documented that camel's milk does have a higher vitamin C content than the milk of other mammals. In cow's and goat's milk, a bit of this essential vitamin is usually produced for a while after the animal has its babies, but then the amount drops to almost nothing. Camel's milk is also a good source of iron and some of the B vitamins. The fat globule size is quite small, making it easier to digest than cow's milk. While milk has several types of protein, any of which can be an allergen, camel milk has much lower levels of casein proteins, making it promising for those allergic to cow's milk, which is the third most common allergen for humans. Depending on whether the milk is raw or pasteurized, the vitamin content will vary, as some vitamins, such as vitamin C, are destroyed by heat. Traditionally and now anecdotally, camel's milk is believed to have therapeutic properties and is used to treat metabolic and autoimmune disease, autism, diabetes, tuberculosis, and several other conditions. As the usage of camel's milk grows, perhaps more studies will be done to quantify its benefits. The flavor of camel's milk is described as mild and not too unlike cow's milk. It has an element of saltiness that may be related to specific plants camels consume. However, salt intake is also utilized by the camel to a greater degree than other dairy animals. They use it as part of their water regulating mechanism. I've not had the pleasure of trying camel's milk. It's a bit hard to source here in North America, although there are several dairies across the continent. Milk, fresh, frozen, and dried, can be ordered from desert farms for about $18 per pint. An Australian company with farms in several parts of the world sells a variety of camel's milk products as well. If you get a chance to visit a camel farm, or even if you see one at a zoo or wildlife park, think about its contributions to humankind and observe the intelligence and adaptability in its wise eyes. Old world camels have no natural predators, so they look at us through a different set of eyes, perhaps even as equals. On that note, you don't have to worry about one spitting on you, unless, of course, you deserve it. Okay, now we're on to the sports college spotlight. Into the Valley, Rough Ridge Bears set to host Drake and UNI. Instead of L. Rough Ridge returning to Iowa, the state will come to her, and the number 20 Missouri State women's basketball team this weekend. The Bears square off with Drake here Friday night before hosting Northern Iowa Sunday. Rough Ridge, a former standout at Pocahontas area, understands the importance of Missouri Valley Conference games now as a junior for Missouri State, who are 12-2 overall, 2-0 in league. Friday's game is very important to us as we move forward in the season, Ruffridge said. Drake is a very good basketball team, and we have to come ready to play. They are picked to win the Valley this season, and we feel like we have something to prove. Now that I have been through this time and time again, I know what to expect for each Valley team we are preparing for. Being familiar with all the venues, routines with road trips, and the style of play from each Valley team, but having experience is key and definitely a crucial piece to success. Add the significance of playing the Iowa schools, and Ruffridge is definitely hyped for the games. Playing both Drake and UNI means a little bit more to me, being an Iowa kid, she said. I have great respect for both programs and also know many of the players, so it's always fun to see familiar faces. The weekend is going to be a lot of fun, as I'm sure many are looking forward to it. Missouri State made a deep run into the NCAA Tournament Sweet 16 a year ago, including two games in Ames won by the Bears. Since December 2018, they are 36-5 overall, which ranks fourth nationally in total wins. Both losses this year for Missouri State have come at the hands of ranked programs on the road. They lost to number 3 Oregon State, 80-69, and fell to 16th-ranked Gonzaga, 64-52. Ruffridge has played in all 14 games, including a start. She is averaging a career-high 6.4 points per game with 25 rebounds, 18 assists, and 7 steals. This season has gone really well for me, she said. I feel more loose as well as confident each time I step onto the court. I have put in the time and work, therefore there is no reason to doubt my ability or myself or my abilities. I have also had the opportunity to play in some pretty incredible games, so having lots of experience has helped improve my game as well. In November, Ruffridge scored 20 points, knocking down 6 three-pointers against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. The Bears are led by Amika Aguga Hamilton, who replaced Kelly Harper after she took the Tennessee position. This is her first head coaching job after spending the past 4 seasons as the associate head coach at Michigan State. Hawkeyes seek rebound at home versus Maryland. In Iowa City, the Iowa men's basketball team will look for a little Carver Hawkeye Arena magic here Friday night. Coming off back-to-back road losses, the Hawkeyes, who are 10-5 overall, 1-2 in the Big Ten, welcome number 12 Maryland, who are 13-2 and 3-1, to town. Tip is set for 6 p.m., and the game will air live on FS1. Dating back to the late November, the Iowa has played 8 of 10 games away from home, traveling over 8,500 miles. Now they get to play 4 or 5 on their own home court. We haven't been at home much, Hawkeye head coach Fran McCaffrey said. Our fan base when we have been here has been tremendous, and we need that, especially when you're playing a ranked team like Maryland. It's been a good game when we've played them, whether it's been here or there. They've been good games. We're looking forward to being back here. A key matchup will see Luke Garza and Jalen Smith as the two big men have a combined 17 double-doubles. Garza, Iowa's Wooden Award candidate, has 9 while also ranking 8th in the nation in scoring with 22.1 points and 14th in rebounding with 10.7. Garza is the only player in the nation averaging over 20 points and 10 rebounds a night. He leads the league in scoring and is second in rebounds. Smith has 8 double-doubles and is averaging 9.7 boards per game. McCafferty knows that teams will focus on taking Garza away. You have to move the ball, screen and cut, he said. You have to go in and out. He has to keep working. We have to keep recognizing when he is open, he's got to get it. We can't stop going to him because they're doubling him, but we've seen it all. Already, whether it's just sitting on top of him or doubling the catch, doubling the bounce, doubling from different locations. There's nothing he's got not used to, and if there's two on one, then you've got an advantage somewhere else. Maryland is coming off a 67-55 victory over Ohio State to go along with wins over Indiana and Bryant since a 52-48 setback to Seton Hall. Iowa heads to Northwestern on Tuesday before three consecutive home games versus Michigan, Rutgers, and Wisconsin. A little bit of news here. Gale 8th grade boys in action in Algona. St. Edmund 8th grade boys basketball team competed at Algona on Thursday night. The A team lost 48-25. Sam Miracle and Denny N. led the way with 7 points each. The B team won 15-13. Thomas Cosgrove had 6 points for the Gales. Sports in brief. Dodgers fall at Valley. West Des Moines, the Fort Dodge swim team hit the pool for the first in 2020, competing against West Des Moines Valley on Thursday night, falling 135-34. Senior Dimitri Grantham turned in top performance for the Dodgers, finishing second in the 100 butterfly. Grantham touched the wall in 1 minute 6 seconds and 72 hundredths. Teammate Colby Doble had a time of 1:08.65, was third in the event. Austin Jordison picked up a bronze finish in the 200 IM. I think that's the individual medley. In 2 minutes, 27 seconds, 39 hundredths. I'm extremely happy for Dimitri, Fort Dodge Senior High head coach Ashley Beaumont said. I'm happy we finished 2 and 3 in the event. The guys swam strong, and it was a great place to swim against good competition. The quartet of Doble, Jorgensen, Grantham, and Ryan Pienda were third in the 200-meter medley relay. The Dodgers were also third in the 400 freestyle relay, and that was Braden Hughes, Alexander Hansen, Logan Eddington, and Braden Smith. North Fort Dodge will be back in action on Tuesday when they travel to Ankeny. In Newell, the second-ranked Newell Fonda girls cruised to a 78-38 victory over Pocahontas area on Thursday night. Bailey Seavers led the way with 15 points as five players reached double figures for the Mustangs, who are 10-0 overall, 4-0 in the Twin Lakes Conference. Megan Morins had 12 points, while Macy Seavers and Maggie Walker had 11. Ella Larson chipped in with 10. Acacia Dutcher paced Pocahontas area with 12 points. Now we'll take a look at Magistrate Court, Webster County on Thursday. Domestic assault causing bodily injury. Troy Joseph Scott, age 59, of Lehigh. Preliminary hearing set for January 24th. Domestic assault impeding air and blood flow. Jacob David Weaver, W-E-V-E-R, age 31. Preliminary hearing set for January 17th. Interference with official acts, same individual, continued 180 days. Possession of controlled substance with intent to deliver, meth. Morquette Borland Jackson, age 34, preliminary hearing set for January 17th. Same individual, possession of controlled substance with intent to deliver marijuana. Preliminary hearing also set for January 17th. He's also charged with failure to affix drug stamp. And Thomas Lee Clark is also charged with failure to affix drug stamp. Thomas Lee Clark is also charged with intent to manufacture, deliver meth. He is 50 and preliminary hearing is January 17th. Violation of probation, Colton Joseph Moore, M-O-H-R, age 22 of Sac City, transferred to district court. Speeding, Elizabeth Salvatore, no age given, Duncombe, trial set for January 31st. And now we'll recap today's weather with a high around 25, low around 4, wind out of the north 11 to 21 miles an hour. Forecast for Saturday, partly sunny, high around 18, low around 8. Sunday, mostly cloudy, high around 28, low around 18. Monday, partly sunny, high around 37, low around 23. Tuesday, partly sunny, high around 33, low around 7. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, high around 11, low around negative 2. Thursday, partly sunny, high around 6, low around 1. Yesterday's high temperature was 47, yesterday's low was 19. Last year's high was 31, last year's low 21. Sunset today at 5:02 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 7:45 a.m. Included with the paper was Webster County's Most Wanted. These individuals were last verified to be wanted as of 1-6-20. William Eugene Whitus Jr., his last name is spelled W-H-Y-T-U-S. Date of birth, 10/29/79, height 5'9", weight 160. Sex offender violation, absence from custody, failure to appear. There's a reward of $125 offered for him. Aisha Ibrahim Ismail, date of birth 6/26/94, height 5'10", weight 173. Violation of pretrial release, reward offered of $175. Gregory Orlando Roby, date of birth 10/14/66, height 6'4", weight 190, domestic assault, reward of $150. Louis Malik Jr., date of birth 2/19/99, it looks like. Height 6', weight 160, controlled substance violation, failure to affix drug stamp, tax stamp, reward of $150. Trayvon Tier Nelson, date of birth 12/8/96, height 5'7", weight 140, failure to appear, reward of $100. Colton Joseph Moore, date of birth 3/30/97, height 5'9", weight 220, violation of probation, reward of $100. David Scott Dayton, date of birth 5/10/86, height 5'9", weight 235, violation of probation, reward of $100. Amy Lynn Terry, date of birth 9/11/83, height 5'7", weight 280. Reward, failure to appear, reward offered is 100. Tabitha Marie Sundermeyer, date of birth 9/10/98, height 5'5", weight 115, failure to appear, reward of $100. Shelly Harrison, date of birth 223.68, height 5'1", weight 150, failure to appear, reward of $100. Kayla Lynn Rolfson, date of birth 11/30/92, height 5'6", weight 115, failure to appear, reward of $75. Teresa Ann Ackerson, date of birth 4/24/86, height 5'5", weight 220, fifth degree theft, reward of $50. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank the folks at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years, and we thank you for listening with Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Have a great day.